Hello, everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate, episode 21. We are in the twos, coming off the back of our Brexit show, which is, well, it should be out by now, if you're listening to this one, where me and Jace took, well, we went around Europe and explored everything but the Premier League. We had a rule in place where we couldn't talk about the Premier League, and it is finally back. And I'll tell you what else is finally back. The three of us. Boys, Jace, Cookie, how are we both?
I'm all right.
I'm not too bad, all things considered.
Yeah, Cookie, long time no speak. You've missed a few episodes, so hopefully you're not, you know, rusty and whatnot, but you've certainly missed out on a lot, so it'll be interesting to see if you can play catch up today.
I'll give him a bad shot.
We've got a week of Premier League football to talk about, which I believe already is game week 8, off the back of yet another tedious international break. Where do we start? We saw Liverpool enjoy what we could call a Bobby Dazzler at Watford. The Foxes, as I'm sure we're all delighted, crushed the Red Devils. And Chilwell lifts Chelsea to the summit off the back of it all. And finally, it's Bruce on the brink as Newcastle sink on Sunday. And Lacazette, you could say, rescues the Gunners from the Eagles' grip, which I'm sure Jason and Cookie have got a lot to talk about. But we're not starting there. We are obviously starting with the televised games, but we're mixing them up. We're not doing the traditional Saturday early kickoff all the way through to Monday's evening game. So you'll be pleased to know you're not going last today, boys. But we may as well start at the summit because, well, a game I thought, and judging by our predictions, so just a reminder, we will cover the predictions in the middle of the show. A bit of a stinker this week for predictions. And obviously at the end of the show, we will cover a new round of predictions and do the typical who's up or down. And Cookie, you've missed quite a few. So off the top of your head, I don't know how many shows it's been, but we may need you to move, well, certainly more than one position up or down on today's show, just to bring you up to speed, because it's only fair. And of course, the Wheel of Wonder comes out. But off the back of a large European show, I may have just changed things up a little bit. You'll be pleased to hear. I don't know whether that applies to the listeners or Jason Cookie. So maybe it gives you a bit of anxiety. I don't know. But as I said, let's start the summit. We do start with Brentford and Chelsea. Not many goals. Well, only the one. Are you surprised by that before we say anything? Because it was Brentford 0, Chelsea 1, just as a reminder.
Yeah, I was. I'm not going to lie. I thought there'd be goals. The opening of the game, I actually thought Chelsea were pretty comfortable. The first kind of 20 minutes, Brentford struggled to kind of get to grips with them. But once Brentford settled, I mean, you've got to look at their goalkeeper, really, as being the one that saved them in the end. And the woodwork came to rescue them, I think, a couple of times as well. So, look, what's interesting now with Chelsea is they started out as outright favourites, I think, for the most part, in terms of the title. And something about them, I think, that's missing at the minute. Don't know if
I'm right in thinking you've both got them at the top of your predictions, haven't
I've
you?
Still got, yeah, I've still got, yeah. Them, I've still got them for the title. I think this was a dragged out 1-0. You know, second half, Brentford come on to him very, very strong. If it weren't for one of the best goalkeepers in the world right now, you're looking at possibly 2-3-1.
What, Mr. Non-Ballon d'Or?
Mr. Non-Ballon d'Or himself. I mean, Lukaku's not doing the business at the minute.
Yeah, 6 games, no goals, I think, if I'm right. Which, you know, I think it goes a long way. Everyone's sort of now throwing him under the bus a little bit for having a bit of a dry spell. But I don't think he's done himself any favours by just happening to score on the opening game.
I mean, everyone's criticising Werner for the chances he misses it for Chelsea, you know. But, I mean, Lukaku's obviously coming to replace him. But, I mean, surely Werner, you've got to give him maybe 2 up top.
I mean, you've got to give Werner a bit of credit, I think. You know, he's worked his way back into the side. He's adapted to a system which, let's be honest, Lukaku's taken his role, got kicked out of the team, is now back in the team in a position that, well, to be fair, I wonder if it does suit him more because he seems to have that about him. And, you know, he's offering a bit, bearing in mind he still isn't banging them in the net, but he's certainly doing well. And Jace, we alluded to this, didn't we, in Cookie's absence? I think we both said that Werner's been a bit hard done by because he's certainly at one point was alongside Lewandowski before Haaland was even on everyone's lips. Yeah. He was certainly the main guy. And I don't think that you just lose talent like that. I think it's definitely there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, any striker that has pace in the Premier League for me is a weapon in that respect. And it's hard to forget. We talk a lot about Werner, but Kai Havertz as well. If it wasn't for the Champions League goal he scored last season, he would have been a flop for the season as well. And they spent big, big money on him. So look, I think you're right. They've accommodated the system. He seems to be finding his feet. He was part of some good things they were doing on Saturday. He obviously needs a goal for his confidence.
Do you think maybe we're, I don't know, do you think we're maybe jumping the gun a little bit and maybe, you know, it always seems to fall at the feet of a striker, doesn't it? You know, if the moment they don't score goals, the pressure's on, and it's always been this way. That's why they're some of the most expensive players in the world. Do you think it kind of ties into the point that we made about Chelsea having a lack of creativity in the midfield, and maybe Lukaku, whereas someone like Salah and Mane at Liverpool could do it on their own, players like Lukaku and you know those sort of target men really rely on world-class creativity. And you know, you would think Chelsea, when you say Chelsea and creativity, you think, well, you know, they've got Pulisic, they've got Havertz, as we've mentioned, they've got all of these, but we've got to remember these players aren't playing. And I was just looking at their previous results,
that's,
and it's 1-0
them players.
Yeah, 1-0 against Brentford, obviously, as it's just happened. You had 3-1 against Southampton, and two of the goals, funny enough, were from defenders. The goal against Brentford was from a defender again. The goal against, well, just looking here, against Tottenham, two goals, Rudiger, Thiago Silva, so set pieces. So there actually hasn't been a goal other than Timo Werner's one in nearly seven games for Chelsea from the top. So we mentioned this before, didn't we? Jorginho, Kovacic, that kind of lineup. Is there a lot coming to players like Lukaku and that? Or are we looking for an excuse to bail Lukaku out of a difficult situation?
I mean, I do think when you look at that team, I do think Chelsea potentially are in a critical stage of the season here in respect of the title, because I feel like there's a bit of dynamism, I guess is the best word to use, missing from the team. You look at Liverpool and they could explode at any moment. But with Chelsea, I don't get that same feeling. I really don't.
You've got Chelsea with all their talent up top. You've got Arsenal, who, let's be fair, if you was going by the talent up top, you'd say they've got a fair bit going for them. You've got a Man United team who have probably got one of the best attacking front lines in the league. But the one thing I feel they've all got in common is that centre midfield is just not ticking. Chelsea are struggling in centre midfield. Arsenal, well, perfect example of the game this week, struggling in centre midfield. And Man United, we've been banging on for ages, have got a bang average centre midfield with Fred, McTominay and Matic. So I wonder whether the problem lies in that centre midfield. And Man City seem to have got that sorted with De Bruyne, Rodri and Bernardo Silva. And we mentioned Bernardo Silva's adapted his game. Spurs, funny enough, still tinkering with that centre midfield. They haven't quite got it going yet. Seem to have found a bit of consistency recently. And lo and behold, it seems to have offered a few results of late for Spurs. So I just wonder whether that is the key. And everyone around us, as we've said, you know, West Ham, their centre midfield has been nailed down since last season. So I just think, get that under wraps and maybe Lukaku will start banging them in. But I just wonder if we were being a bit too harsh on it. But at the end of the day, it's what you pay that money for, you know. But it's down to Tuchel to identify where the problem is. Because, I mean, you've only got to look at Chelsea's scores, you know. 1-0, yeah, they beat Southampton 3-1, lost 1-0, lost 1-0, beat Spurs, beat Zenit 1-0, 1-1 draw. I would expect Chelsea to have a few fours and fives if they're winning the league. I mean, Liverpool and Man City are banging in goals against the smaller teams. So, problem, few issues, nothing. I mean, at the end of the day, they're top. So, what are we going on about? And they've beaten a good Brentford side, but I don't think there's much to add in regards to Brentford. I don't think this will be on their list of points lost. If anything, it kind of showed they're worthy of being in the league. Do you think Brentford will take something from that before we move on, Jason Cook? Do you think they'll be quite impressed?
I think, like the coach said at the end of the game, they were playing a Champions League final at the same time as Brentford were playing their playoff final.
Very true.
And I've maintained it throughout. I think Brentford are a very good footballing team. I think they're a well-oiled, well-drilled machine. And I don't think it's coincidence the performances they're putting in. I don't think it's coincidence the players are managing. Because I don't think when they recruited in the Championship, I don't think they recruited with being in the Championship in mind. I think they recruited with, we need players that fit our system, but also fit the quality profile, if you like, for being in the Premier League. And I think hats off to them, that they know what they're doing. They'll feel hard done by, because I do think Chelsea's goalkeeper was man of the match by far, especially in the latter parts of the game. But yeah, I think, don't think they'll be too disheartened. They'll be happy with the way they've started the season, and they'll probably feel a little bit aggrieved, to be honest, that they didn't come away with a point. But, you know, I don't think they'll have any complaints.
Me and Cookie certainly didn't see this Brentford performance come in. You did. So fair's fair. You know, they've certainly deserved to be there, and they're way ahead some of the teams that are down the bottom. So, you know, fair play to them. But we move on, and Cookie, I'll let you come in first once I've introduced the next match. So it only seems fitting that we go one place down to a team who, well, if you was just watching football and not looking at league tables and points, you would assume that Liverpool would be top of the table right now, because somehow we're saying Chelsea are looking a little bit shoddy, but, well, Liverpool you would put at this moment in time in the world-class bracket. And yet, here they are, 1 point behind Chelsea. So they've spanked Watford, a struggling Watford, it looks like, at this moment in time, on their own turf. And they just look a team that seem content when you hear grumbles about rotation over at City and whatnot. You've got a player like Bobby Firmino who comes in for one of his first starts of the season and he bags a hat-trick.
I mean, Watford were absolutely awful. You think first game under a new manager, you'd go out and impress. But
We'll come to them in a bit.
But I mean, some of the passes Liverpool were trying out on that Watford defence, I mean, that was like a training game for them. They were looking to see what kind of, how many different ways they can score goals. And if all else fails, just run at them. I am happy for Firmino. I mean, he has struggled. He's been on and off. I mean, how many games did he go without a goal? I mean, 15, 20 games without a goal. So to see him come on, Jurgen Klopp's obviously gave him a little cuddle, pat on the back and say, look, go and show me why I want you as my number nine. And he was there, right place, right time. 6-yard box, tap-ins. You know, it's what you want as your number nine.
Yeah, you can't complain. I mean, they just seem, this is the thing. And Jason, I remember you saying this, you know, there's this, it's, and I think PSG was funny enough, the team you was alluding to when you said this. there's a different, you can instantly see when there's a team and then a club full of top individuals, because any other, can you imagine a Neymar or an Mbappe or a Messi coming on for his first start of the season after playing 20 minutes here and 25 minutes there and banging a hat trick in at, with a smile on his face? There's just something about Liverpool, and I think we all understand last season was just an odd season end of, regardless. But they, I mean, Jota finds himself on the bench after probably being their, if not Salah, their best player this season. And, you know, at the end of the day, they just seem to be all working together for that one outcome. And that is
the team winning
the league or winning the Champions League, whatever it is they need to do. And full credit for them. But at this moment in time, I mean, you would assume Liverpool were the team top of the table. So I think that's where a bit of credit needs to be given to Chelsea, that fair enough, you know, they're ahead of a team like Liverpool at this moment in time. But before we move on to Watford, because I think we've got a little bit to say about Watford and where they're going to be this season, because, you know, Cookie,
are we giving mention to a player now, are we?
Well, we've got to, haven't we? Because, you know, the TFD, I mean, who at this moment in time, there's two players, I think, and it was posted. I think you've got Mbappe and you've got Mo Salah, and there's a shout for Haaland being in there. But I think for as long as you're still at Dortmund at this moment in time, we're just waiting for that one step up from him, I think. So Mbappe and Salah at this moment in time, would you say that they deserved to be side by side as contenders for best player in the world right now? Or is it even a race? Is it even a race to put Salah and Mbappe next to each other? Or is one of them way ahead?
For all of Mbappe's quality, notice I said
his ego
and not class. For all of Mbappe's quality, I don't think he's anywhere near Salah's level. I do think with Mbappe, he desperately needs to move from Paris Saint-Germain now to prove himself on the biggest stage. You're talking about, when you're talking about the best in the world, and you think of Messi, Ronaldo, and all they've achieved over the years, even Lewandowski, he doesn't get enough plaudits. Lewandowski, for me, is still above Mbappe.
I think you're right. I think you're right. The only reason I think I'm comparing them two at this moment is because they're very similar, Mbappe and Salah.
If you're careful, I think Haaland could overtake Mbappe as well.
Yep.
Look, let's face it. It sounds like I'm hounding out Mbappe here, and I'm really not. But now, I'm not saying Mbappe's not world-class. He absolutely is. But can he really be, given in the context of what Salah's achieved in his career, given that he started at FC Basel, then he went to Chelsea, didn't get a look in. Then he rebuilt his career at Roma. Then he came to Liverpool, and I was one of them that said, no way he ain't doing that in the Premier League. And I followed him quite closely at Roma. And he's kind of gone back to front, and, you know, he's proved that he can cut it in the Premier League, and he does it consistently and to the tune of 30-plus goals. But he's also taken Liverpool to their first Premier League title, or helped, I should say, because obviously there's other members of the team, and they've won the Champions League under his watch as well and got to another Champions League final. So I guess my point is, you talk about Salah and Mbappe for Ballon d'Or. For me, Salah is miles and miles ahead of him.
Best player for Liverpool in the past 20 years?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'd say so as well.
Yeah, Gerrard was Gerrard, and he gets the plaudits, obviously being local lad and all that. But look, let's face it.
Salah's won things.
As good as he was, yes, they won an FA Cup. Yes, they won a Champions League with Gerrard, but he was never able to elevate them to the heights they are now.
No, Cookie, would you say Salah's the best player in the league? In the Premier League, easy.
In the Premier League? I mean, you've just got to watch his goal on the weekend.
Well, which one was better? That's the problem.
Which
this
one?
Week's or the last week's?
Oh, this week's technically.
it was ridiculous, wasn't it?
This one was ridiculous. I mean, don't get me wrong, against Man City, to skin up Bernardo Silva the way he did, who's world class in his own outright, against the one of the best defences we've seen in this country, was insane. But he manages to top himself somehow. I mean, anyone who doesn't watch the Premier League and watches that game and watches Mohamed Salah's goal, you know, you would think he's the best player in the world by a country mile.
I think there is a strong argument at this moment in time that Salah
the only one I can think of in the last 5 years who acted like that was Eden Hazard at Chelsea. When Hazard was virtually unplayable and unstoppable. I mean, at the minute, I can't see any defence at the minute stopping Mo Salah at least creating anything or being skinned up. He's just on fire. And I can't see anyone stopping him.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I think you're right in a sense that Lewandowski is probably the only other striker that I think would be in contention at this moment in time to have it put against him as to whether Salah's better or not. But regardless, I mean, at this moment, the fact that this Liverpool team has scored 5 goals with Firmino in and Jota sitting on the bench is frightening, because it's just like, I mean, they could take any one of them out. Bad. Well, let's come on to Watford then while we've got, you know, a few minutes to discuss them. On previous shows, me and Jace, in your absence, were talking about them and about, you know, how things were looking. And funny enough, the last time we was on together, all three of us, we all said we wouldn't be surprised if Watford made the first shot. Lo and behold, they did. We haven't actually discussed this fully yet, surprisingly, this managerial change. I mean, my note here says, would they really have been any worse at this moment in time with Cisco in the dugout? For the life of me, understand the change. I mean, I don't see the direction. I don't see what was any different with this Watford.
But the fact they sacked the manager before going into a game against Liverpool. I don't understand.
What we didn't understand, well, what I certainly didn't understand was this was a Watford side who were, at the time of sacking their manager, sitting in what? 14th, 13th, whatever it was? I mean, am I mad for thinking that they were overachieving here or what?
Well, the thing for me, and Watford were almost as big of a joke as Norwich at the moment, to be honest.
I wondered how long it'd be into it.
Oh no, he's mentioned them.
It really is. I mean, look, as Scott alluded to there, you know, before Liverpool, they were sitting in like 14th or 15th place on 7 points, I think. Which, given if you look at the table at the moment, Villa on 10 points in 13th. Palace on 8 points, Southampton on 7. I mean, has it really been that bad? I know the performances have been questionable, but like Scott says, I don't see he would have done any worse.
They've got 2 wins on the board. Southampton have only just got their first win on the board.
Yeah, so I don't get it. I think it's got disaster written all over it. It did when Ranieri went to Fulham. It didn't work. I think it'll be the same again. It's just, there are a bunch of random players clustered together. Obviously, Watford's recruitment isn't, I don't know enough about Watford, but what I do know is most of their player recruitment is based on the Pozzo owners and their links to their various clubs and feeder clubs and stuff. It is going to be a season of struggle for them, full stop. Ranieri, how long he lasts, who knows, but I certainly don't think he'll give them the upward trajectory they need coming into kind of Christmas and New Year period. So, look, it could be gone by the end of Jan. But, yeah, I mean, this result didn't surprise me at all. I didn't think it surprised anyone. And I certainly think maybe the only thing that was surprises how easy they rolled over for Liverpool, but no surprises for me. And I think Watford are doing typical Watford things and going to be in for a long old season.
How many managers they've gone through? I mean, too many. I can't count.
Something like 9 or 10 now or something. Oh, but
that family's a joke.
Anyway, we leave them behind. Well, I guess we go to, and this isn't a dig, funny enough, it's fact. We go to a mid-table clash between two lovebirds, it seems. Now, boys, we do have 15 minutes on the clock for this. You've already had a little chat about it, about how you've spoon-fed one another and your teams love one another and everything. So I'm not expecting any, you know...
He's just jealous, Jason. Don't listen to him.
Well, I don't love any part of our food.
Jealous of
what? Don't listen to him.
Jealous of what? Our table position's one digit. Anyway, let's go to your game then, because Cookie, let's be fair, I'm sure you're on cloud 9 at the moment, because it could have definitely been a defeat. And Jason, how many more times am I going to... say you've come away with a draw that feels like a loss?
I mean, I don't know where to start. So, a couple of talking points. The first one, pre-game, the unexpected loss of Zaha came out of the blue. I looked at that starting 11 and I thought, Jesus, where's that creativity coming from?
Licking my lips at that one, I was.
I bet you were. And the thing is, as you both know, over the past 2 or 3 seasons, well, it's been well documented, even in the media, when they build up our matches. If Zaha don't play, you know, you might as well pack up and go home. I think we've only picked up kind of 4 points over the last couple of years without him in the team. So it did feel like a loss. You're right, Scott. It felt like a massive kick in the bollocks. But, you know, before the game, Zaha gone, you look at that starting 11, I would have, you know, bitten your hand off for a point. But what makes it more impressive from Vieira's perspective and Palace is that game yesterday ends a run of 8 games where the average position of the teams we've played is 5.6 and we've played 3 of the top 4. I mean, those players are really bought into Vieira. And as for Arsenal, let's give some airtime to Arsenal. For me, the big talking point, could not believe how absent the midfield was. And I could not believe Arteta's attitude of, well, once we want 1-0 up, we want something to protect it. I think he came out post-match and said, well, the idea was we wanted an early goal and we wanted something to protect. And we know 1-0s aren't pretty, but they get the points. But you're playing Crystal Palace at home. Like, you're 1-0 up after, 8-9 minutes? Like, you've got to do more. You've got to show more. You've got to be braver.
Well, you're right about a midfield, because I can't believe I'm saying this, but we actually missed Granit Xhaka in this game. I mean, I've never seen a team so scared when they're in possession of the ball trying to attack a goal, which is the aim of football. And then when they haven't got the ball, they're so scared of defending that they're actually running away from the football. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, Arteta has been speaking all week about defence. We've got to keep clean sheets. We've got to defend of our lives. And that just says to me, you're only going for 1-0s. You're going for 1-0s, 2-0s, even take 0-0s.
1-0 to the Arsenal, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, you go to 1-0 to the Arsenal. But I mean, 1-0 is not enough in this league. Look, you can criticise everything, but the manager and all that. But, I mean, it doesn't maintain the fact that the two mistakes led to your two goals.
I mean, look, Tomiyasu, Benjamin White, I'm not Ben, Gabriel and Tierney, to be fair, week in, week out, look all right. I think Ramsdale certainly surprised us and gives you something you've not had in a while at the goalkeeping position, which is key. But for as long as you've got Partey, Lokonga, Xhaka in front of that back four, there's only so much, I think.
I mean, the Palace goals. I mean, Gabriel and Ben White. I think, Jason, I don't know where you were sitting in the stand, but I swear they were running towards you.
Yeah,
They're backing off and backing off. They're in the goal.
Arsenal have got problems. They need, as Scott says, it's that midfield. It's that midfield, and the midfield is so important in the Premier League. Well, in any football game, to be honest, at this level.
Well, we move on. I feel like we jump on an Emirates flight and fly over to Saudi, but instead we're only going to Tyneside. Do you know, funny enough, I've got a bit more to maybe say about Newcastle than I have Spurs, even though we've won a game that after those first 2 minutes, I didn't think we were going to win. But we actually showed a bit of character in this game, which is a relief.
I'm interested to see what you've got to hear on Newcastle, actually.
I'll get the Spurs bit out of the way, because I'm not going to give as much time to Spurs as I am Newcastle.
Spurs, to be fair. Big result.
It is a very big result for Spurs. Bearing in mind, we could have been the victims of a witch hunt, you know, the media being all over this takeover and so. And it would have certainly thrown, I keep saying this, fuel on the fire for Newcastle and really given them a boost. And it would have been Spursy of us to be the team that gives it to them. But we probably showed more in this game than I've seen in a while. We had players show up to the party finally this season. One of them, Ndombele, as you said, Harry Kane had a good game, and fair play to him to score the goal he did. It was a great finish. And there just seemed to be a bit of a click going on in that game for Spurs. They were playing well. The back line, funny enough, Romero comes in and we actually looked all right. Lo and behold, the mistake falls to shock Eric Dier. Skip Højbjerg and Ndombele, happy. I've said this week in, week out, while Spurs are in this really difficult position, you need players like Lucas on the pitch who just give their all every game. Even though he might not be the best player that we've got, he's got attitude. Do I think this is going to send Kane on a run? No, not necessarily. Do I think it's going to do him the world of good? Yes, I do think it will do the world of good because it is his first goal. Funny enough, it could all turn on its head. We've got West Ham next, which is going to be a tough game away from home. Then we've got Man United. I'd love to be the team that bin them off on Halloween. Now, let's come to the big talking point. Look, my point that I wanted to raise before I pass it over to you two is, am I the only one that sits here and thinks this takeover means fuck all until January? And by that time, you could be gone. Like, where is still this mentality
I think it means fuck all for a few years, because we've already seen clubs are already voting against sponsorship deals they want to take on.
100%. You've almost taken the words out of my mouth, to be fair. I think we ran on about it a couple of weeks ago before the takeover talk, and we said by December they could be cut off. So I actually think, for all the positive PR and all the celebration and stuff, I actually think now Newcastle are in a really, really precarious position here, because there's talk of fans wanting big players and, you know, big name managers and this, that and the other. But what they have to recognise, I actually tweeted it randomly. I don't know if you saw it the other day. I just put a random tweet out because I, for one, have felt the same as Scott and probably you as well, Cookie. Outside of all the media hype, so I'll read what I said. I said, for all the hype of their takeover, Newcastle would do well to recognise in the short term that come January, their first priority will be to stay up. Games between now and December aren't kind. They're in a relegation dogfight. No amount of money can guarantee a way out of that. The first thing they have to do is realise that they are in a relegation scrap. Forget bringing in Contes and all these Fonsecas and Luca Favre that they've been linked with. They're not good enough in defence. Midfield, okay, they've not got a bad midfield, but they need to learn to win games. And the reality is that fixture list between now and January is not kind to them. Yeah, they've got Callum Wilson. Yeah, they've got Saint-Maximin. But they face that Palace game is probably their most winnable game between now and December.
I think they need to keep Steve Bruce in. Well, they can't be hounded. They can't be hounding other managers, because that's like you guys say, they've got to realise they are in a relegation battle now. They haven't got to win this season. They need someone in there who's got experience down that area of the table.
If they sacked Steve Bruce tomorrow, yeah, right, and Watford hired Steve Bruce, Watford would stay up.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. The whole managerial situation should have been sorted before the takeover was ratified, because now what you find is they go into a key game on Saturday, what we now, Wednesday tomorrow, so 3 days before a big game, to be in a relegation battle, you've got to know the Premier League. You have to know how to win Premier League games. You can't just come in and do your expansive style and expect it to turn overnight. Be careful what you wish for, I think, is the mantra here, because it could well come back and blow up in their face before they even get...
I think it could. I mean, the fact that Newcastle have only in one game not scored a goal and they've somehow still not got a win. Every other game they've scored. And we said they would be this team, didn't we? They would be the light leads. They need to score, you know, more than two goals to get a point. And lo and behold, they've scored two goals and still lost. We'll see. We'll see. Funny enough, you know, bearing in mind, we've been talking for quite some time. We still haven't got through all the televised games. We've got one more. Everton West Ham. Now, I don't know about you both, but I was quite surprised by it.
Big win, West Ham.
Well, that's I think that's what
in
I
terms
was
of the
say.
League. In terms of the league itself, I mean, if Everton win that game, they're up there with Chelsea, City.
It was a massive, massive game. I don't know about you, but I was surprised.
I mean, I thought it probably that one was going to be maybe a draw. But, I mean, West Ham, so far, injuries have been kind to them. They're flying in the Europa League and they're flying in the Premier League, aren't they? So, we said before, the key was keeping fit. The likes of Antonio and obviously Benrahma, Bowen, and it's working. As I say, I didn't see that result come in. I thought Everton might get something from it at least, but David Moyes again doing what he does best for him and grinding out the result. And yeah, I mean, look, they're 3 points off third, so I really didn't expect them to be where they were, but they seem to have carried on the momentum from last season for sure. Everton, I don't think, look, they've had a good start to the season. Obviously, they would have liked something out of that game being at home, but...
Well, there is a big talking point in regarding this game. I don't know if you both seen it. You know, Cookie, you just mentioned the fact that they're missing Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin, which I think is big. You know, we said this. This is where things, I think, injuries start to play a massive part and take centre stage in a season. And I don't think Everton will be too pleased that Doucouré is now looking like he's going to be out for a good month or two. As for West Ham, I'd say that's a good 3 points they've recovered from their little... spell, wouldn't you? But I think West Ham deserved it. Pickford had a great game. So if anything, it could have been worse. But I do think Everton, and we said this before, once those games come thick and fast and injuries start to come in the winter break, this is where squad depth becomes a real big issue. I mean, you alluded to this earlier, Cook. You know, Everton and West Ham, you'd be sitting there thinking, well, 7th and 8th, that's pretty solid, pretty good, 14 points. All it takes is two losses and the teams below them to get two wins, and all of a sudden you find yourself in 14th.
As you said, I bunched the pack up really nicely now. But I mean, from that place from 4th to 14th, 15th.
Yeah, no, it's only 8 points between Southampton. Well, Watford in 16th and Brighton in 4th is 8 points.
I mean, yeah, that says it all really, doesn't it? That's crazy.
It's crazy, isn't it? So, yeah, that was the final televised game. Obviously, you know, it was quite a big story. Not a lot happened in it, but great result for West Ham. But, yeah, Everton, I think they could be one of those teams this year that just think, oh, if only we didn't have as many injuries, we would have probably done better. But I don't think they've got too much to worry about, but maybe just not top of the pack that they would have hoped to be come maybe December time, I would have thought. We get to the middle segment. So what we'll do first is touch on the predictions from last week. As I said, it was a bit of a dire one. One of us didn't score any points. So the games were Villa Wolves, Southampton Leeds, Brentford-Chelsea. So Villa-Wolves, obviously that finished 3-2 Wolves. Cookie, you said 2-2. Jason, you said 2-1 Villa. I said Wolves would win 2-1. And I've got to be honest, I took a punt on that one. Luckily, it's paid off. It's got me a point. Southampton Leeds, we were all wrong. We seemed to think that Leeds would end up spanking them. 3-1 Leeds, you both said, and I said 2-1 Leeds. Lo and behold, it ended 1-0 Southampton. And then Brentford Chelsea. Jason, you took a very wild punt and thought Brentford would win 3-2. Cookie, you said 3-1 Chelsea. I said 3-2 Chelsea. So the goals certainly dried up.
I'm the one on 0 points, aren't I?
Yes, you are. So, Cookie, you got a point.
Oh,
so
that's consolation.
You got away, and then I got another one. So that leaves us, me top on 18, Cookie second on 11, Jason third on 8. So you've got some catching up to do, my friend. We go on to the, well, how many times do I need to keep saying this? The favoured segment of the show due to, you know, listeners' feedback. At the end of the day, what can we do? I can't help what the listeners are saying.
The listeners,
your end. We do, of course, come to but we do it slightly differently this week. Off the back of the special edition European show that me and Jason attempted to do on episode 20, I thought it would be nice to maybe change things up so you can get rid of all your tabs with League One, Championship, Serie A, Bundesliga, La Liga off your screens, because this is a heart and mouth moment for you both now, because now you're thinking, hang on, what have I got to try and figure out? We're only going to discuss three things today, one each, and I'm going to give you, well, it's up to you. I'll give you two minutes on, bearing in mind it's one segment. Right, I'll spin the wheel and I'll let you know what your topic is. Oh, you'll probably be happy with this one.
I feel like you've gone a bit off piece with this, Scott. I feel like you've gone a bit Squid Game on us and you've led us onto the deep, dark unknown.
You know, fair's fair. I think Cookie's gone first. And actually, rather than episode 7 of Squid Game, where going first was a bad idea, this might not have been a bad one to do. Because Cookie, I want you in 2 minutes to talk about, and you don't have to start straight away, I'll give you 30 seconds. I want you to talk about the Ballon d'Or nominations.
Ooh.
And what your own thoughts are. So there's no right or wrong answer. Just discuss it, what's happening with it.
Oh, I'm ready as I'll ever be.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
So as we've already touched on it, there's a guy in there that probably should have been nominated, especially given his performance on the weekend, in Edouard Mendy. However, Ballon d'Or don't like goalkeepers or defenders. Just ask Virgil van Dijk 2 years ago. But the favourites are obviously going to be Jorginho, Messi, Ronaldo. I mean, I don't personally think any three of them should get it. I think it should be going to the guy who's actually playing the best player in the world at the minute. And currently, that is a shootout between Lewandowski and Salah. There's a couple of notable nominees in there that have had very, very good seasons. The likes of Gerard Moreno, Pedri, who's played 1,000,001 games. Chiellini, one of the rocks in that Italian defence. Bonucci's partner. Special shout out to Simon Kjær for AC Milan. I mean, if you actually look at how he's played for AC Milan, I believe he's actually had a very, very good season with him, and he started off the season very well. But I mean, I still can't get my head around the hype about Jorginho. He's just the likes of players that have gone before him. He shouldn't be anywhere near it. It's just the fact that he's won everything there is to win this season. Again, same with, you look at the likes of I mean, Sterling shouldn't even be on the list, to be honest with you. How is he on the 30-man list? There's players on there that are way, way above his level. That's it. That's all I got.
Well, no, very good. 1:55 Well within your limit.
Okay, you cool. pulled out a few bags of knowledge there, which was fair play to you. That was good. It was nice that you alluded to the Kier situation. A lot of people seem to think that was a sympathy nomination, but
that wasn't a sympathy. I think he's played very well for AC Milan. Even this season, I've seen bits of him, and he does lead that back line.
If that Christian Eriksen incident doesn't happen, he's not in Ballon d'Or territory. I'm sorry. Come on, let's be real.
Well done, though. You did well there, Cook. Did very well. Bearing in mind, it's thrown through you in the deep end, and it's probably one of the only ones that, you know, you have to have a bit more of an opinion on out of these two, because someone gets a, you know, the other two, one of them's out of the blue, the other one's fits enough along the lines of what the traditional Wheel of Wonder is. So, Jace, I'll bearing in mind, I know what these two are. I'll let you have a fair shot of either one. Spinning now. I want you in 2 minutes, I want you to tell us what's happening in the EFL Cup.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He's still in it. Right, are you ready?
Yeah, go on then.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go for it.
Well, if you're lucky enough to be in this pointless trophy, there are 16 teams left in the Carabao Cup. And it all comes round again next week on Tuesday and Wednesday. Arsenal, Cookie's own, will face Leeds. Chelsea face Southampton. QPR will go head-to-head with Sunderland. Burnley Spurs, Leicester Brighton, Preston Liverpool, Stoke Brentford and West Ham Man City. Couple of interesting ties on there. Brentford fairly strong, 7-0 winners in their last round. Liverpool on song, fancy themselves against Preston. Leicester, key win against United, fancy themselves with the trophy. Arsenal, I don't think trophy is in their vocab at the moment, so potentially a tough game there against Leeds. And you'd fancy Chelsea to carry on their vein of form against the Saints, beat them comfortably in the league. QPR Sunderland, God knows what will happen there. But yeah, nicely teed up. Last 16, then it'll be on to the last eight in what is probably the most random, pointless cup currently out there.
You done?
You can tell that he's thrilled.
He got to 1:20. He did drag it out. I mean, for the likes of QPR Sunderland is great because one of them, a non-Premier League team, is going to be in the quarterfinals of a trophy.
I mean, which is, I say pointless, I meant that in the wrong way. I mean pointless as in, I think it should be there, but because I do think for the bigger teams, it's an opportunity to flex out your squad and actually give them a run at something and keep them motivated. But the whole sponsorship crap with Carabao and random draws at 3 a.m. in the morning, I mean, I'm hardly going to set my alarm for that, am I? It's... it's a bit strange. They've devalued it by making it too commercial, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. My topic then, so as I said, I kept some of it traditional to an extent. The last topic was to summarise tonight's games, and that's across all competitions. So looks like that's landed with me, which will be interesting because I've got to now somehow cover both Champions League and Championship because there was Championship. There was a big game in the Championship as well. So
glad you got that because I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think, well, then you might as well just listen then and you'll find out what's happened.
This would be interesting.
Right, whoever's counting me in, I really don't mind.
Ready when you are. 3, 2, 1, go.
So, yeah, everyone's all eyes on the Champions League, but there were five games in the Championship tonight, and I'll start there first. So we had Bristol City 1, Forest 2, Derby 2, Luton 2, QPR 1, Blackburn 0, Sheffield United 1, Millwall 2, unfortunately. And in the big one, Bournemouth beat Stoke away from home. So that puts Bournemouth now 6 points clear at the top of the table with a game in hand over the teams below. So big ramifications there. I think that is certainly the one that could push Bournemouth all the way to the, well, promoted spot. Derby's still in bottom, but I think they'll take the draw, being on 4 points, not far from getting out of relegation. Anyway, on to the big tournament then. I think we've got to start with Ajax Dortmund. I mean, where on earth has that close fixture gone? Ajax 4, Dortmund 0. I mean, no one saw that coming. Atletico Madrid 2, Liverpool 3 is a big one. Salah 2 goals again. Griezmann was on course for a hat-trick, decided to get himself sent off. Man City won the early game against Club Brugge 5-1. And the other big game saw PSG, close call, win 3-2 against Leipzig. And Real Madrid decided to put the Sheriff loss behind them and win 5-0 in Ukraine against Shakhtar. Other games were Inter 3, Sheriff 1, Porto 1, Milan 0, which is probably going to go down as a surprise. And Besiktas lost the early kickoff against Sporting 4-1 on their own turf. So, yeah, that's the roundup of the leagues. And there's no point going into tables because there's still three more games to go.
I mean, no point, but you could have done because you had 20 seconds to spare.
Couldn't risk it.
It was an Open League game.
There was, but it was Celtic, and who cares?
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, we're three games in, and, well, things can turn on their head. I mean, we were only talking about last week Real Madrid with that big loss to Sheriff, and all of a sudden they're tied on points with Sheriff. And I just think three games is just not enough to talk about the table. But what about an Ajax result? Jesus Christ.
Ow.
Beat Dortmund 4-0, and Dortmund had a full squad and all. Bloody hell. Right, we hit the last segment then, so obviously we don't spend as long on these, but I mean, it is, two of the games were certainly a big one, and unfortunately we have got to give Norwich a few minutes because they decided to show up for the first time this season. We start with Aston Villa Wolves. We messaged one another, I think, funny enough, during this game, and it looked like it was going a certain way, and I thought, oh, maybe Wolves haven't crossed that bridge, but if anything, they've now come out stronger with their never say die spirit, because how on earth have they won that? And who does it speak more for, Villa or Wolves?
I mean, it's a problem if you're Villa. I think, given the money they've spent, I've said it before, but are you really happy with the money you've spent and the players you've got, that you're sitting in 13th place, pushing
up? Do you think they need a bigger manager there to handle 100%. The players?
I've said it.
Don't ask him that, Cookie. Fucking hell. I mean, if it's not Ollie, it's Dean Smith, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
I didn't think Jason would rip into Dean Smith. I was actually quite surprised when we were talking about this.
The thing that will cost Villa with those quality players is a manager that isn't tactile enough and agile enough from a tactical perspective. To be 2-0 up in that game and then lose it 3-2 at home. And let's not forget, it's not just any game. This is a big, big, big derby. This is a massive, massive game.
They lost it with 10 minutes to go.
Go, yeah.
It was 2-0 until the 80th minute.
Yeah.
They were in control. Didn't they take off Douglas Luiz?
Yeah, brought on Macamba.
They had a couple of substitutes.
It was odd. They took off, I think, Buendia, brought on Ramsey. So they brought on a couple of the youngsters, which I think was where they thought they were seeing the game out, and it really didn't end up being that. Do you know what, Jace? The first thing that I thought of when Wolves were 2-0 down with 10 minutes to go, I don't know if you noticed what it was, but there was one thing that stood out to me, and I thought, this is playing perfectly into our hands for a story when we come back on today. Lo and behold, it hasn't quite panned out that way, but you do wonder that whether there was a little bit about it. Did you notice Wolves' starting lineup?
No, Traore back in.
They started Traore and they were losing 2-0, and I thought, oh, what are you doing? But apparently he did set up that way on purpose. He thought that he could get in behind Villa, but clearly wasn't working.
About Villa, I mean, I don't know enough about their midfield and the Canberra and Ramsey or whatever, but Morgan Sanson was on their bench, a fully fledged French international. If you want to keep the game tight for the last 10 minutes being 2-0 up and keep the ball, surely he's a player to do that, no?
A bit of naivety, maybe.
This is what my point was going to be about Dean Smith. Is he enough to take them forward to that next level? Same with Solskjaer and United. And the answer is no, because games like this, managers at this level do not lose.
Yep, no, agree. And it just makes sense when we talk about naivety and managers that we would come on to. And we do only have 5 minutes, so
say, he's had his rant. That's it. We already know about Solskjaer.
I don't think we need to go into too much detail regarding Solskjaer. I mean, obviously, we need to discuss certain decisions because there were certain comments made, and that's kind of come back and bit him in the arse a little bit. Leicester 4, Man United 2. Now, where do we start as a Man United fan? Not that we are one, thank God. But where do we start pushing the panic button here? Because
now
that's okay. Now. Okay, well, that was a big statement, now. But fair enough.
All I'm going to say on United is Solskjaer again, and there's only so much that Ronaldo and the senior players will take because they're just a joke. He went off against Everton smiling. He probably went off, I didn't see his post-match reaction, but he's probably smiling. He's like, oh, admittedly, I didn't do my job today. I'm really sorry. Like, come on, man. You're the manager of Man United. You've arguably got the most dynamic team in terms of front four or five available in the league, aside from maybe City and Liverpool. Like, really?
Can I also highlight that that's a Leicester team that hasn't won a league game since August?
I think he suffered for having Ronaldo up top.
I called this. I called it. I said about Bruno Fernandes. He's not the same player for Portugal as he is for Man United.
He is
suffering. And I said this. I said the Ronaldo transfer will do nothing for Man United. And lo and behold, all the articles now are saying, has he actually made it worse? Because they're being punished at the back. They're being walked over. It's all a bit odd over there. I'm not blowing my own trumpet here, but you can go back and listen to the shows. As Ronaldo signed, I said, I think there's problems. There's a lot going to be exposed now. Man United were already being caught on the counter, let alone with Ronaldo.
I ain't taking nothing away from Leicester in this game because they.
Well, I was about to say we need to give Leicester a bit of. Yeah, we need to give them a bit of credit.
Back to his best. They were. He put two up top. He went with a back three, which did surprise me. But then given the slide that they've been on, he had to change it up a little bit, Rodgers.
Well, they've hit form at a good time because they've got Brentford, Brighton and Arsenal next. I mean,
hope it's not a one-off because these sort of performances could be a little bit outliers and they could go back to type.
Well, you're hoping it's a one-off because you're facing them in the next couple of weeks.
Of course I do. And Vardy loves that Arsenal, playing at the Arsenal.
But I mean, Brentford, Brighton and Arsenal is about roughly where they are at this moment in time. And Brighton are where they want to be. And let's be fair, Brighton could be tailing off. You know, they've had their run. They're currently sitting in 11th on 11 points. Scoring goals, leaking goals. I think they've got enough time to, it's 4 points and they're in the top four again. So
indeed.
It doesn't
and
take
a
lot.
Special shout out to Jason's favourite player, Daka, finally got to show what he's about if they get
they need to get him
time.
Running though because I mean
they do need to get him running.
How long do you wait for Jamie Vardy to sort of pan off? I mean, he's 34 at the end of the day. You need to start rolling
does he
him
pan
in
off and, is he one of those of special players the older he gets better?
Well, who knows? I mean, at least give I don't know. I would say Daka's, you know, keep playing him in the Europa League and the cup competitions and just get him ready because there's no point waiting for Vardy to pan off and then you haven't got a striker on form because I don't think Iheanacho is their long-term solution either.
That and keep Tielemans sweet as well because a lot of clubs will be looking around for him. Yeah, I mean, a guy with that talent, he can run that midfield on his own.
Well, he's the type of player that Man United need. Anyway, we move on and we've got the final three games. I guess we better come to first the Man City win over Burnley, get them out of the way. I felt personally Sterling gave City an edge. We've been saying this for a while. They've looked lethargic. They haven't had much sort of dynamic to their team. And I just feel like he gives them something that the other players don't offer. I mean, they've got Phil Foden on there. They've got Mahrez, great, great technical players. Sterling is that player that just frightens you when you get running. We've said it, and I'm not going to go back to it multiple times, but Grealish being in the side, I think, slows them right down. I wouldn't be surprised without Sterling in that game that Man City, you know, find it a little bit tough. They come away from with the win as expected in the end. But, I mean, do you agree? Do you feel like Sterling does offer them more and puts them right up there with teams to be feared? Or do you think it should be Grealish and Foden and Jesus in the same team?
For me, it's Sterling over Grealish every day of the week. And you're right. Like, he looked hungry. He had a spark about him. They were dynamic. I find the alienation of Sterling very odd and random on Pep's part. And I don't know if that's because they plan to get him out of the club and use him as a make-weight for potential striker targets to join, but
I think you hit the nail on the head on that one. I think it is.
For Sterling to come out publicly and say, and for that interview to come to head and say, look, I am looking at other options. He's not normally that type of player, to be fair, or certainly hasn't been since he moved to City. Maybe he was when he was at Liverpool, but he was younger and more naive then. But he's openly come out and said he's after more opportunities. I just find the persistence of not using him particularly odd. Maybe it's because Grealish coming in was going to be Pep's golden boy, and maybe
where does he go from here?
Who, Sterling?
Yeah, where does he go? Because I mean, look, he's not going back to Liverpool, that's for sure. He's not going to Chelsea. I don't think that's what Chelsea need. He's not going to go to Man United, is he? And then all of a sudden, you're talking about a real fall from grace because the next teams you're talking about are then Tottenham, West Ham's, Everton's, Arsenal's, Leicester's. Doesn't look like he's going to go there because it looks like when Spurs were discussing the Harry Kane situation, he palmed that off. He's not going to get in a PSG side, is he? Because let's be fair, their front three is pretty much sorted. He can't go to Barcelona, surely, because of their financial worries. So where does he go? Does he go to a Dortmund? Does he go to a Bayern? I mean, do they need him? Sané's there. I mean, where does he go?
Atletico Madrid, I don't think you'd go there.
Does he go maybe to Juventus, something like that? I don't know.
I mean, you say to Zika, but Sterling's 26. Mahrez is the old.
Yeah, this is it. This is the thing. This is what I don't understand. It's almost like Pep Guardiola's bored with these players now. He's like, oh, I need new players now.
It's contradicted though, because he's brought in, and again, I don't want us to talk about him because we've alluded to this many times, but he brought in Grealish, who is 26. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know whether this Sterling thing's got tiring for him, whatever. But I mean, it seems like we're in a unanimous, well, certainly two against one, if not you, Cookie, because I don't know if you've answered it yet. But me and Jason certainly feel that he should not be going anywhere.
No, he shouldn't be going anywhere. I think he's got the capability of running that front line.
The only thing I can allude this Sterling situation to is the fact that, if I'm correct, his contract expires in 2023, because there was talk before of Sterling's wages obviously rocketing up, you know, past kind of 500k or whatever a week. Now, could it be that Pep and City are almost trying to devalue his value to Man City in order to help wage negotiations on contract? I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Interesting, because he's actually his own agent.
Well, yeah, it's just his family and himself, isn't it, that does it?
It's interesting.
Is this Man City's way of saying, in terms of new contract, thinking about, because look, if they're going to sell him, he's got a year going into January, he'll have a year left on his contract.
I've got to be honest. I mean, before we move on, there's news within the last, you know, 24 hours or so that City have valued Raheem Sterling at 67 million, right? Now, I've got to be honest.
Bargain.
Yeah, I'll City bought him for 57 million pounds. So you're telling me in those 6 years he's been at Man City, his value's only gone up by 10 million. With all that he's brought for Man City in terms of league titles, his England performance, something just doesn't sit right for me there. And I know his wages are probably going to be quite high. And, you know, you're probably talking about what, easily 200 grand a week, I would have thought. But I don't know. I mean, if that is the case, 67 million, there has to be clubs in there, hasn't there? There's just got to be inquiries, yeah. Because I don't think, I mean, you're telling me Jack Grealish is 33 million pounds more expensive than Raheem Sterling. I'm sorry, I'm not having that. An odd one. Certainly something to discuss as transfer news starts to come around, because, I mean, what does he do? Does he wait till January? Something to discuss when it comes around to January, I'm sure. Maybe we'll have a show on the whole sort of situations and what clubs should and shouldn't do. We've got two more games to wrap up in the time that we have left. We are going to start at, we can call them Norwich this week.
No, we can't.
Rather than the old Charity FC. We'll see how long it lasts anyway. But because, I mean, let's be fair, you can't say it wasn't a good result. It probably was a good result. I mean, when you add context to it, it's still no win for Norwich. But, you know, a draw against Brighton is probably what they should have been doing from day one, not losing the games they've lost. Funny enough, even in a 0-0 draw, which is a good result for Norwich, they still had an absolutely, well, comical moment.
They had that moment.
Jesus Christ. I mean, even off the back of this draw, which is a good result, you still can't help but look at that and go, fucking hell. For Brighton, any team dropping a point against Norwich at this moment in time is not good. But look, that open goal attempt, I think it says a lot. Briefly between you, go on, I know you're itching. Briefly between you.
Well, that's what they deserve, isn't it? Fucking, that's what they deserve.
Now, I think Brighton's bright start has all of a sudden stuttered a little bit. They've gone a little bit goal-shy. If you take away that last-minute goal against Palace, they have gone a little bit goal-shy.
Well, they have only scored 8 goals this season, to be fair. Yeah, 3 draws in a row, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now?
It was always going to happen. They were never going to be less. It was always going to balance out, wasn't it? It's one of them. Yeah. There's always a team that gains early momentum and then it tails off when the rest of the pack kind of catches up and stuff.
For me now, he can target games, Graham Potter, now and go, right, I can save up for that game. I can go, because he's got points on the board.
I think he needs to have a word with his team as soon as possible to kind of go, look, let's not fall into a slump, because your next two league games are Man City and Liverpool. I think he needs to tee them up and say, look, we're probably not going to get anything out of this. Let's focus on the EFL Cup, get a win against Leicester. They're into the quarters, which is, you know, fair play, happy day. Because then after that Liverpool and Man City game, they've got Newcastle, Villa and Leeds. And all of a sudden, they could be picking up points again. So
target games.
They now. Need to. It's yeah, I think they're in a position where they can.
Now where he's had his start, he's got his points on the board. Made an impact, you know. Now you can go and focus on games and take
second,
free shots.
I mean, they're third best team in the league defensively this season.
Good stead.
5 goals conceded, and that's obviously the back of losing Ben White.
Twist of fate, their problem last season was goal scoring, and if that goes up, that's what dragged them into it before. So,
As for Norwich, look, just briefly before we move on.
Fucking they're gone.
Best result of the season for them, I'd say, though, which says
a lot. A 0-0 draw, miss an open goal, best performance of the season.
They've not scored now in 4 games.
That just says it all, really, doesn't it?
All right, we do move on then. So we leave that behind and we come on to, I've got to be honest, I would argue that this was probably one of the biggest games of the week. and probably one of the biggest results of the week for that club. Southampton beat Leeds. Now, there's a pro and a con to this, Jace, and I don't know whether you remember the news story we was building up for these run of games for Southampton, because there was an interesting development with the whole Southampton starting 11 for this game, because we said it was key for a certain striker of Southampton that he hits a vein of form, and he didn't start. Now, Southampton won Leeds nil. Just to get that off the table, massive result for Southampton. Leeds, I mean, you're talking about a team that supposedly are exciting to watch, and they had three shots all game against a Southampton side and had none on target. Saints literally warped them.
Well, the other thing, of course, is doesn't it show the lack of depth once they, I mean, to be fair to Leeds, they were missing Rafinha, Phillips, Kosh, Bamford and Ilin, Luke Ilin. So what's that, five players? So half the team was missing, but it just goes to show how little depth they actually have outside of their starting 11.
Bamford's goals were drying up before he went out as well.
Well, Jason's alluded to that a few times, to be fair, and said, and we've said, look, Dan James and Rodrigo is not going to do you well. I think there are problems at Leeds.
They're not talked about, though, are they, in the media?
No, this is the thing. It's like they can just sit there because Bielsa's going to pull them out. But they're 17th. I mean, they are literally teetering on the edge.
Goalkeeper's not improved either. I would have thought he kicked on by now, but he looked
there's only so much you can do. To be fair to him, he's still only 21.
He's not a bad shot stopper, but he's still only 21. But, you know, David De Gea...
His confidence any good?
David De Gea at 21, when he came to United, had Ferdinand and Vidic in front of him with Evra and Rafael left and right back, respectively.
And even he struggled in his first season.
But then he built himself up, and then he had confidence in the defenders around him. Look at what he's got in front of him at Leeds. Like, yeah, it's great to watch if you want to jump that bandwagon. And yeah, there's loads of chances in the game. But I mean, come on. You're talking about a Southampton team that have also struggled and were missing Che Adams and James Ward-Prowse. They're in deep trouble. They are in deep, deep trouble. I don't see where their next win is coming from. And as for Southampton...
But monkey off the back for Southampton, though.
Yeah, I think Southampton deserve to be spoken about here.
It's a key result for them because now they've got Burnley at home next. They've got the EFL Cup. Then after that, they've got Watford away.
They can get a run together
Norwich
now.
Away before they face Liverpool. So they've got three or four league games there where they can get
some confidence.
So what are we saying? Because obviously we've been building this up over the last few episodes that we was going to start talking about it. And lo and behold, there was a damper put on it by him not starting the game, which is a big call. We've been speaking about how Armstrong has desperately needed to kick into gear off the back of Danny Ings, bearing in mind he's only scored one goal this season and he was the man to come in and replace Danny Ings' goals. We've spoken about this run of fixtures that he could have, you know, bagged a few goals and got himself firing. And lo and behold, he's dropped for a 20-year-old, if I'm not mistaken, Brozier, who actually got the goal.
Good player.
Where does that put Armstrong? Is it just a one-off or do you think it was kind of acknowledgement from Hüsenhüttl that he's just not doing the business?
No, I think he's in trouble. I think, look, it's his first season, so it's, you know, we don't want to jump down his throat too much because it is a step up from the Championship to the Premier League. But generally speaking, I mean, we spoke about it, as you mentioned, over the last week or two. But for him, if he started, it was a key game because he'd need a goal. But more the concern, from my perspective, would be you bought in that player on 17 or 18 million quid. He weren't cheap. And to just drop him, I mean, it's warranted, don't get me wrong, but Scott mentioned it a lot of the times when we were doing the pre-season build-up, and especially when all of a sudden out of the blue Danny Ings left. Like, if they don't replace Ings, they're in trouble. My only concern with them is Rozier steps up and gets a goal, but we now need to see him going on a run of form and getting some goals, because if he does the same thing as Armstrong, where he gets one, plays well for a couple, and then just drifts off, they're in the same predicament. The thing that is going in their favour at the moment is they are playing well, and they do look more defensively stable, arguably more so than they ever have been under Hasenhüttl. But again,
it's a big call from Hasenhüttl to drop him, though. He does speak volumes of the manager.
I mean, we're talking about massive win. They've got no Ward-Prowse, no Shea Adams. Jack Stevens is out for an injury. Armstrong's dropped. Yeah, Walker Peters hasn't started. So, you know, you're talking about a really big, big win in a six-pointer. Well, that wraps up the week. So, you know, we've got to the end of it, which leaves us two final things to do after the terrible predictions that we did last week. Let's see if we can get a few more points on our belts for this week. So obviously we didn't think you were going to be here, Jay. So we were doing things slightly differently. And then lo and behold, we ended up all doing the show together anyway. So who's giving their first game for the predictions? Come on in. Let's have it.
You know what I'm going to pick? I'm going there. It's going to be West Ham Spurs.
Oh, the big DVD final for Spurs, huh?
Exactly. I've got to pick it.
All right, then. And your prediction is what?
3-1 West Ham.
Jace?
I've gone... This is going to backfire on us, Cookie. I've gone 2-1 West Ham.
That's not backfiring.
The thing is, my head certainly says one result, but my heart, I just can't do it. So I'm going to have to be as cautious as I can be, because I just cannot see us winning this game. I'm going to say 2-2. Go on then, Jace, your game.
Leeds, Wolves.
And your score?
2-1 to Wolves.
I'm going to say 2-0 Wolves.
It's not even
Cookie?
I've gone opposite. I've got Leeds to get back at home and nick a 2-1 win.
Fuck off.
No.
I have.
Jesus Christ.
I've got some catching up to do. If this one plays out.
God, I'm not fucking having that.
What were you smoking when you came out with that result?
I mean, something I want, because I would have said Spurs would win 4-0.
I mean, look, for a start, Leeds are going to actually at least concede 2 goals, at least.
Hey, I feel like we're bigging this up way too much. He's going to end up being 2-0 Leeds.
I'll tell you, Leeds, you can't do this now, every time we do this.
You said 2-1 Leeds, right? Just to make
yes,
sure.
I have.
Okay. Well, I mean, you talk about throw the hammer down. I think I'm going to go and do it because I have definitely picked the biggest game of the weekend. I have gone for Man United Liverpool. I felt like we needed to throw in a blockbuster, and forgetting there was West Ham Spurs, there's quite a few, it seems. But yeah, Man United Liverpool. So I mean, I think I want to go big. I think yeah, I'm gonna go big. I'm gonna go Liverpool to match their score last year and win 4-2.
Yeah, I've gone 4-1 Liverpool. I just think Salah, at the minute, if he scores anything like the goals we've seen him score in the last 3 games, surely he's just shooing for the Ballon d'Or.
Well, I can't wait for Harry Maguire to start chasing around the field against Salah. 3-1 Liverpool.
Yeah.
I regret saying Man United are going to score 2 goals, to be fair. I just cannot see them doing anything, but I'll give them a bit of credit.
When you smashed them 6-1 last season.
Yeah.
That could be that kind of game, the way the two teams are playing.
Be interesting to see if Solskjaer survived that, if it was something like that. Okay, that's cool. That's the predictions done, so we'll keep an eye on them. Now we've got the final who's up or down. Cookie, I believe you need to move 2 positions. If I'm right, something like that.
Right,
I think it is. Or 3 even. I don't know. I don't know how many times it's been that you've missed the show?
Is there a limit on how far I can pull them up or down?
Well, obviously, you can pull a team down three spots if you want to use up all three positions. You can either move three teams once, or you can move two teams, one twice, one once. Doesn't matter.
You're
but
right,
you've missed three
Yeah, I made a bold prediction at the start of the season, which Jason's probably still laughing. The richest club in the world now.
What are you doing? Or you're
having
an
hour in. Down all three because...
Oh, bloody hell.
I'm going to have to.
What did you have them originally? What was your original thing?
Go on then. So Newcastle are now what?
14th, aren't they? Mm. I'm putting them down three, can't I?
Yeah. And they're still way too high.
And
okay,
still
that's
too high.
I'm pulling Watford down into relegation now, one more spot. So Brentford are finally out of the bottom three because I got that horrendously wrong as well.
Yeah, I need to drag this out because, yeah, that's who I got really wrong.
Yeah, I've put Watford in 18th now and Brentford are now
Rest
in 17th.
I've got about similar.
So that's mine. Jason, what are you doing with yours?
I'm going to move Leeds down from 9th down to
10th. Yeah, definitely. I've got them in 10th and I'm sitting there thinking you are not above any of them teams that are below you. Well, that wraps up this week's then. Don't need to drag this bit out. It's good to have all three of us back. Cookie, we will see you in a couple of weeks' time. Anything else you want to add before we sign off for the evening? Take that as a no. Good night, all.